The Bitcoin Group, the American original. For over the last 10 seconds, the sharpest Satoshis, the best Bitcoins, the hardest cryptocurrency talk. We'd like to welcome our panelists, Dan Eve, the Crypto Raptor.
Giggity giggity, giggity goo.
Ben Ark from LN Bits.
Evening all.
Josh Shigala from thestandard.io.
Hello, hello, hello.
And I'm Thomas Hunt from the World Crypto Network. Moving on to issue one. Issue one, Bitcoin advocate Michael Saylor stepping down as CEO of the company after the crypto crash loses it $1 billion. While they're claiming everything is fine and he's moving to a new position that'll allow him to continue to invest the company's money in Bitcoin, as predicted on this show, Michael Saylor is indeed seemingly in trouble with his company for losing $1 billion in Bitcoin. MicroStrategy seems to be an all Bitcoin company, Saylor moving over to the president role and MicroStrategy to have a new chairman of the board. Dan Eve, is this what the Bitcoin group predicted when they noticed Michael Saylor and MicroStrategy seeming to have a single strategy of just buying Bitcoins, which often go up, but sometimes go down?
Yeah, it does kind of seem like he was, you know, where he was shilling Bitcoin so much, maybe he upset a few, some of the shareholders, obviously not just because Bitcoin dropped, but because he was shilling his own sort of personal bags as well. I initially, you know, I saw it framed very much as like, oh, Michael Saylor's, you know, finally stepping down, because he's been the CEO, right, since I think 1989. So he's like finally stepping down to focus more on Bitcoin, you know, just like Jack did, for example. And then it suddenly dawned on me, I was like, or maybe it's because Bitcoin has kind of dropped quite a lot since. I think it's $1 billion they're down at the moment. But the share price has made a reasonable recovery. Like it hit a low of about 155, 156 bucks, and now it's back to 318. Perhaps, you know, that is off the back of the Bitcoin price. But it's, you know, it's only recovered or only gone up a little bit since he announced he was sort of stepping over. But being chairman, right, gives him a bit more power to hire and fire CEOs, and also, as he sort of said himself, to focus more on Bitcoin and the strategy side of it. My prediction for the last, or price has been, you know, lower, and I'm for the last couple of, well, 3-4 weeks, and I've been wrong every time, which is good in a way, but it's also bad because I like being right every now and then. But his bar, I think it was 3K. The Saylor bar was, you know, he said was 3K would wipe out MicroStrategy. So I'll be interested to see now that he's moving away from the role of CEO, if they do a Tesla and start scaling off how much Bitcoin they have, or whether his influence there is still going to be enough that, you know, why sell now? Why sell when it's down? And why not just wait until the halvening and the kind of cycle comes back in? Because we all, you know, we know that eventually it's going to be back up to higher highs, in theory, based on previous data, right? So, it's going to be an interesting few years lead up to the halvening, and to see how his role kind of, his role, his new role shapes the MicroStrategy strategy.
It sounds like Michael Saylor meddled with the primal forces of nature. Ben Ark, what about MicroStrategy and their new CEO?
I guess this is why we get these like prolonged flat periods in Bitcoin where we feel like the price should be going back up, but it doesn't, because there's these people like Michael Saylor who have these huge bags, who have a boss, everyone has a boss. His boss is the shareholders, and he's now, I mean, to step down, I mean, it's just bad timing. I'm sure he wouldn't choose to step down from that role after 20 plus years of being in that role in the bottom of a bear market. But whether or not now MicroStrategies will start selling off some Bitcoin and then keeping that, you know, prolonged downturn or flat period in Bitcoin, which we kind of, I think we're starting to accept will happen up until the halving pump, which is the usual pattern of behavior for Bitcoin. That's what we'll look out for next, I suppose. But he's been this great spokesperson for Bitcoin. He's good at speaking on Bitcoin, and I kind of feel sorry for the dude. But I think maybe his strategy, his micro strategy, might have been to buy a load of Bitcoin, pumped the hell out of it. And then he thought that maybe just he could loan shill Bitcoin to the moon. And it just shows that no one can control it. No one can control this thing, this asset. It goes down, it goes up in price. And even if you've got big fat bags, you can't control it. But I do kind of feel that there's probably a few Michael type sailors out there with big bags who are now going to have to sell off some Bitcoin. And that's going to keep that price suppression and keep that downward momentum or maybe just keep us flat lining up until the halving pump. So
some people say that Michael Saylor just wants to spend more time with his family. Yes, more time with his family. Joshua Shigala, what about that? What about Michael Saylor and the $1 billion Bitcoin loss? Josh is muted.
I'm so sorry. So the thing with MicroStrategy is that they've been around since like the late 90s, and they went through the internet bubble. I think they even had an ad at the Super Bowl at one stage in the full hype of the internet bubble. But after that, they really didn't do anything. No one heard of MicroStrategy. It was nothing. And it reminds me very much of a company called Dwala, who were doing money transfers to Mt. Gox. Now, Dwala were nobody. No one knew this weird fintech crap company that had no relevance at all. And Bitcoin made a massive. Everyone was talking about Dwala all of a sudden. And they really got a name for them. They raised money on the back of it, this and that. And then they dropped Bitcoin because, you know, there was a bear market and something happened and they were like, ooh, and then, you know, it was said, oh, you better not touch Bitcoin. And of course, as soon as they dropped Bitcoin, they fell into absolute obscurity again. And I feel that what MicroStrategy did is basically become a household name within the Bitcoin or crypto industry. And as soon as they sort of do this and distance themselves from Bitcoin, it'd be like, well, what do you guys even do? That's all you do is hold Bitcoin. You are essentially an ETF. You're a company that holds Bitcoin on its balance sheet, and people buy shares in your company, effectively buying Bitcoin. What are you going to do? Like, are you going to let go of that business model now because you just have got these paper hands, and then forcing the hand of Michael Saylor with these like diamond extra long leverage all the Bitcoin you can because he has this vision. I think it's a terrible move. They need to keep that backbone, understand that right now is the time when it goes back up. You can see historically it's boom, 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 fear and greed index, buy when it's fearful, don't sell. Anyway, let's see what happens. I think it's a shame because it's these companies that think they're so big and famous because they're successful when really they're successful because of Bitcoin. And they should realize that.
What I find so interesting about the MicroStrategy strategy is that it would have worked really well if they were early to Bitcoin. If it was 2013 and they were watching Mad Bitcoins and they just heard an Andreas speech and their eyes opened up and they started buying Bitcoin, we all could have bought stock in MicroStrategy early. People who needed their retirement funds could have invested there. Bitcoiners could have celebrated it early on, and we could have had a champion to fight people when they were calling us rat poison, when they were saying it was drug money. For years, they attacked Bitcoin with these things, and we had no champion. So that's when we could have used them. Now that everything was good and fine, it felt like they were just piling on with the rest of the good news. And now that we've had a bad turn, exactly what we said would happen. He's been taken down by the board, good or bad, wants to spend more time with his family. I like the thing where they said, he's going to work on our Bitcoin strategy, which basically seems to be borrowing money and buying Bitcoin. So revolutionary strategy. Could have been a little earlier, 2013, 14, 15, any of the previous downturns would have been a great time to enter, but he didn't enter during a downturn, he entered during an uptrend, and he's been the king ever since. Josh is sending us the Super Bowl ad, we'll see, maybe we can play it later, but we've got to move on to the exit question. Exit question, predicting against the incredible and baldest travel eight ball in the business, the greatest predictor of predictors, Dan Eve. The price of Bitcoin this time next week, higher or lower?
I've got to go low. I'm still thinking we're going to dip below 20 again soon. I'm very sad. I'm very sad. But don't worry, everyone. I'm wrong always. So that means we won't.
The negative news crew from Dan continues. Ben Ark, do you also have the pessimist bug, a virus that has made you wrong and me right week after week after week?
Yeah, Laura, we're in stressful bear market times when it puts it all into perspective and you're like, I just want to spend time with my family. I'm so stressed out, this Bitcoin thing. And then most people, they just go back to work and they just keep their little Bitcoin stash. But someone like Michael Saylor can't, because this is his whole world. It's going to go lower at some point. Just keep predicting it's going to go lower, and it'll go lower, hopefully.
Josh Agala joining in on the negativity, or is anyone going to join me in positive land?
My question is, are you flying soon in between? Well, when Mad Bitcoins flies around the world, historically the price goes up. So let's see. Maybe that will happen again.
Josh is using the Sherlock Holmes logic right there. It's a two-pipe problem. Well, and yeah, now, the price of Bitcoin be higher this time next week? We're asking the ball. It says, for sure, for sure. Take that, you pessimists. For sure, the price will be higher. The ball has spoken. This is obviously financial advice. Moving on to issue two, Senate bill would hand Bitcoin, Ether, oversight to commodities regulator. Yes, as we've been requesting for over 8 or 9 years now, they're finally going to consider treating Bitcoin as a commodity, not as a security. As we've said for years, Bitcoin, a new form of money, the internet's form of money, is much closer to a commodity or even a currency, like a cryptocurrency, like the thing we've been calling it. Still, calling it a commodity would perhaps get rid of the penalty for every time you use Bitcoin. Allegedly, according to the tax code, you're supposed to pay every time you buy and pay every time you sell, like it was a security. Of course, most people don't use securities to buy coffee. That means you'd pay every time you'd buy coffee, and you'd have to have a mark in your taxes for that. Ben Ark, your thoughts on the United States seemingly coming around to their senses, presumably at like an actual bill that might actually pass, labeling Bitcoin and Ethereum as commodities, not securities?
Well, they are commodities, so that kind of makes sense. It's kind of a double-edged sword, and I feel like it's a good and a bad thing. Like, it's nice to have permissionless development in a murky area where you can just kind of develop stuff. And it's murky enough that you'll probably get away with it with the regulations aren't really there yet. So you can kind of squeak between the rules. And I know in the US, you've kind of got all the stateside stuff. So different states have different rules, different regulations. But then for companies operating in the space, they just kind of want clear regulations and want to know where they stand so they can, you know, put together sustainable business models, which aren't going to have to change when regulations change. So I can kind of see both sides of the argument. Obviously, you know, when regulation on Bitcoin is bad for innovation and permissionless development, but can be very good for these companies who need to operate in a regulated environment. And it is a commodity, so I think it's good news in that regard.
Josh Agala, the state's got a state. Now that the state is here, everything can be fixed. We'll all move forward together, holding hands, singing.
Kumbaya. Kumbaya. It's been what it's been treated as in Germany for a long time, as a commodity. That's why it's capital gains tax free after holding it for a year in Germany. I think to the envy of many people around the world, it is a commodity. It's a rare number that's found into existence, just like gold is a rare metal that's found into existence and spent. It's not a security that's conjured up in someone's book out of thin air. sure, it's out of thin air, but it was actually found with a lot of power and mined this rare number. So it is a commodity. I understand that a state needs to classify things, places. I would consider it as a good, which I guess any like a good is also classified as a commodity in a way. But yeah, I think it's a good move. It's definitely not a security. I would be interested to see what happens on ETH, because ETH allows you to do a whole lot of things. And it's not just Ethereum, it's all the tokens that happen on the Ethereum network, I guess, would be treated very differently. I think here they were talking specifically for the Ethereum cryptocurrency and the Bitcoin cryptocurrency.
It is interesting to continue to see people calling Ethereum a commodity, not a security, when we know it had an ICO, it had a pre-mine, and the pre-mine was used to support its development. So it almost seems like a company that would have an IPO and use the proceeds from the IPO to support their company. It almost seems like they sold a stock, which is what we said years ago. And apparently we were wrong, because the price of Ethereum went up. Dan, Eve, your thoughts on Bitcoin and Ethereum being treated as commodities?
Well, it's definitely a positive for Bitcoin and really Ethereum, whether or not you're on the side that it's a security. What's interesting is that, like, a lot of the sort of feedback you see on Twitter is that from sort of Maxis are angry about the fact that Ethereum's included in that you know, this in going under the CFTC rather than being, you know, under SEC oversight. More so than just being happy that it's being considered a commodity rather than a security itself. But as you pointed out, the fact that it's, because obviously there's still people trying to call for it to be a security because they don't know what Bitcoin is. But the fact that it's a commodity rather than, as you pointed out, rather than actual money, when you think about it, like when you send, it's Bitcoin is more of a more money like than the money we have now that has all these different settlement layers. When you send Bitcoin, it's final. When you send, you know, when you buy or sell like steel or rice or whatever on the internet, you know, you're not actually buying it directly. You know, you're not sending the asset directly, but that's what you're doing with Bitcoin. When you're sending money over the internet with PayPal or whatever, you're not sending that money directly. You're sending kind of, you know, offline versions that are settled at different times or whatever. So Bitcoin really is like the most money type of money that you can have, but it is being considered a commodity, which is better than nothing, really. At least it's being recognized. I think it's a good thing. Obviously, you know, people are still angry about Ether being included in that. But on the same side, you've got one thing that I thought was interesting, but from a politics side. So Elizabeth Warren's got a bill to stop offering banks as Bitcoin and crypto services, which is when you think about it, is actually kind of the point of Bitcoin, is that you don't need a bank to actually to buy Bitcoin, right? You don't need a bank. So it's interesting to see, you know, I don't know if is this final, right? Is this absolutely final? Can it be contested? So it still can be contested, right? Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see how it does play out and how much support they do get. But I think it's obviously much better that it sits under the CFTC than the SEC, that's for sure.
Well, that blends well into the exit question. Forced prediction, predict the future. Josh Shigala, will this bill pass, yes or no?
I hope so.
Ben Ark.
I think they appreciate and they want to make room and space for a Bitcoin industry to be able to grow and develop. And this thing's here to stay. So I think it's a good sign in that regard. I was kind of interested, actually, and I was going to ask Josh about this. Like, when it comes to a commodity, something like gold, which is a commodity, does that make room for all the different commodity use cases of gold, like how gold is used in dentistry, electronics, jewelry, etc.? Would that be similar for kind of Ethereum or Bitcoin, in that as it's registered as a commodity, that this still applies for it in its various commodity uses?
Yeah, all it does is categorize it under the tax law and such. That's all they care about. The use cases, the use cases are arbitrary. Yeah.
And Dan, Eve, yes or no, will they pass the bill?
Oh, I don't know. There's still a lot of environmental FUD that's pretty big at the moment. So, yeah, but I think, yeah, I think it will go through. I think it will go through. Fingers crossed.
I agree with what Dan said. They want to make room, or Ben, I think a second ago, he said they want to make room for a Bitcoin industry. They don't want to chase this away from the country, and they fear that the confusing and perhaps draconian tax code would chase it away. So I believe they will pass this bill. Things will get better for Bitcoin in the United States. Moving on, check out worldcryptonetwork.com, where we now have 3,000 videos. That's a lot of videos. Thanks to DJ Booth for creating this website. Also check out On This Day. You can see we did two videos in 2020, a video in 2019, 2018, two videos in 2017, two videos in 2014, and a video in 2013, all on this day at worldcryptonetwork.com or madbitcoins.com. Moving on to issue three, Bitcoin mining difficulty rises 1.74% after three consecutive drops. Yes, Bitcoin mining has recovered and is rising again. This means that more people are mining Bitcoin, making it harder to mine Bitcoin, despite the price being down from an all-time high of around 60,000. Dan, Eve, your thoughts on the Bitcoin mining difficulty rising after three consecutive drops?
So it's back up at, I think now it's 28 points a bit info charts, 28.175 terahash, which is crazy. And trillion difficulty, and about 199 exahashes, which is still pretty much only about 15% below its all-time high. So, you know, it still is and will be for probably forever the most secure network on earth. Secure power. But this got me thinking about like my old so I dug up a spreadsheet I had, which is called Bitcoin Calc V2. And this was in July, I think, 2014, when I used it. So I priced up a load of, so bearing in mind, like the Antminer 14, the Antminer right at the moment, the thing the most powerful is like 14 terahashes. And the order I put in, unfortunately, a long time ago, was for the Butterfly Labs, the SGL 600. And then after that was the Monarch, 60 gigahash seconds. So that's how much like back then. It was that was one of the fastest when I was looking. And I've got like a spreadsheet where I priced it all up. And some of the for some of the oldies, there's an Antminer S1, the old school KNC Jupiter, for all those reminiscing out there. There was the Block Eruptor Cube, the BF, the Butterfly Labs BFL 50 gigahash miner, and very very old school little spreadsheet. And I should have just instead, I think I ended up mining something like Philosopher's Stone and bought a bunch of script miners and some crazy ass stuff. So I should have just bought Bitcoin and should have just mined Bitcoin. But I think it's incredible. Like looking at the stats, I didn't actually record annoyingly what the difficulty was back then, but it certainly wasn't anything near 28 trillion and an all-time high of 30 trillion, you know. So it's incredible how much of a long way it's come. And that was 2014, so that was like late to the scene, really. It'd already been going since 2009, when it probably started off with a difficulty of one, when Satoshi kicked it all off. So, it's come a long way, and it is the most secure network on Earth. Uptime, incredible amount of uptime, probably. And I don't know if anyone's ever done a comparison, but like the most uptime ever of a system. It's got to be, right? It's got to be. Hooray for Bitcoin.
Ben Ark, if Dan Eve is correct, why shouldn't miners just buy Bitcoin and hold it? Why do they even mine Bitcoin? Are they doing it for some political reason? Are they motivated by something other than money?
I don't know. I mean, that's a question which you could ask about Bitcoin mining throughout the entire Bitcoin's history, isn't it? I mean, I don't know too much about Bitcoin mining, in fact, so I haven't really got too much to say on this topic. But when we have a drop like that, Dan, I was going to ask you this. Like when we have a drop in hash rate, is that because they're switching their miners to mine something else? or what's the reason for it?
The drop in hash rate might just simply be like, you know, it could be something as simple as like a if it's depending on how long it's down, but like a mining you know, outfit that's moving, right? They've had to move premises or something like that. It could even be that they've had a power cut or internet's out or something crazy like that. But it's probably likely this either, it could be switching over hardware, right? It could be like bringing some old new hardware online, but then there's problems with the facility, so they take the old hardware off before they've got the new hardware back up. So it could just be something old and fiddly, like when stuff just used to go wrong and you're away from it, and the support's not there. Like I don't know, the guy's having a spliff or whatever, and they're like, "Where's Hank? Where the hell is he? He's got to go and switch, you know, put the cable back in. Damn it, the whole mining outfit's down." That's what I used to do. I was like, at one point, I phoned my girlfriend. I was like skiing, and I had TeamViewer on my phone, like in the Alps, and I was like using GUI Miner. And I was like, "Harry, miner 3 is down." I'd be like, quick, go and restart the machine. And she'd have to go and like turn it off and then turn it back on again. And yeah.
So it's your fault and your sketchy mind is going offline, is it? So I guess this touches into the previous subject with the US having more clear regulations around Bitcoin. Like they can, for miners now, it's going to be easier for them to set up if they have like clearer state, you know, countrywide regulation as opposed to statewide regulation. I don't know much about mining, but I know Shilling Mining, which is an Irish mining outfit. They've switched completely to renewables now, wind farm, which is very exciting. I finally have another, I think I've got like three examples of actual renewables being used with mining, which I can put on my awesome Bitcoin mine, awesome Eco Bitcoin repo. So congrats to Shilling Mining for that. But yeah, apart from that, I have no idea why the hash rate drops and pops back on. I mean, I'm sure, like as Dan says, it's people moving their operations elsewhere. And maybe now with clear regulations in the US, maybe they'll have a lot more miners moving that way.
Josh Shigala, the price of Bitcoin recovered slightly and everyone turned their mining machines back on?
Yeah, I mean, mining is a very calculated business model. You basically have a runway. This has been all the way back when Bitcoin was $30. Like, miners were not profitable unless you could hold Bitcoin long enough with the capital gains at the time, because the difficulty versus how much hash rate you could pump out. So it's always been the same. So what happens is that there's a definite number that a definite price that Bitcoin gets to, where you can then calculate, okay, I can hold this. If Bitcoin stays above this price for a number of time, then we can turn on the miners now and build, you know, take X amount of profit from running these machines. So what you want to do is basically wait until you hit that price, and that's why you'll get suddenly, usually round numbers, because very sometimes can be quite human, but then if it's very intensely calculated, you'll get down to the cent in terms of longer haul.
What about the cost of energy with the Ukraine Russian stuff? Do you think that could have affected hash rate?
That can absolutely affect the hash rate. This is all complex math, basically, in a spreadsheet that you plug in stuff and have real time. And you know, the thing is, you get also different pricing in summer and winter because more people turn on, especially when it's super hot everywhere and everyone's cranking the air cons. Then the premiums on energy go up during the day. At nighttime, it drops down, so you might switch on more miners. There's all sorts of stuff happening, and it's easier to turn on miners and turn them off than it is, let's say, crank up full energy things, like, you know, actually creating the energy. It's kind of hard to wind that up and down. But there's many reasons. The stoned engineer falling asleep. As well as actual hard numbers and the math of profitability on Bitcoin miners and how long you can hold versus in a bear market. And so, yeah, it's hash rate always goes down when there's a bear market, and it always goes back up as soon as it starts bulling again. It actually should be part of the fear and greed index.
At one point, one of the major effectors for hash rate was the season in China. Whenever it was the flooding season, they'd have to turn off their miners and move to higher ground. And when it wasn't flooding, all the machines would be running. So it's interesting to see how the oversaturation in the past of miners in one country led to actually a geographical weather indicator showing us where the mining would go. Moving on to the exit question, there's an idea in the Bitcoin community that ending the mining subsidy is a bad idea, and that if we end the mining subsidy as currently planned, it goes down about by half every 4 years on average, eventually going almost to zero, certainly well below one. Dan, Eve, what do you think? Should we continue to pay miners, or is there a chance that Amazon and other companies will step up and mine Bitcoin for the good of the network? Maybe the users will mine it, or do they all need to be paid? Should we edit how Bitcoin works?
But that sure, if you kept on giving a block reward, that means you'd have to change the supply, right? There would have to be a, because otherwise, it's going to be fee based. But if you think about the fact that it's scaling down by half each time, so it's such a long way to get to that. You know, was it 2130 or something? It's such a long time to get there that, and in theory, you know, if Bitcoin's price is going to be a million and plus and whatever as kind of as the prophecies are foretold, then by the time it reaches, even like down to like, I don't know, like, you know, a few hundred thousand Satoshis per block for the reward, the fees are going to be so profitable because Bitcoin, in theory, the price is going to be so high that it may not need that block reward, right? Because that is the subsidy. The subsidy is the fees. Bitcoin's so expensive that the miners could work off the fees. I don't know. I'm not an economist, but what I can tell you is that Bitcoin is here to stay, and a lot of economists or call themselves professional economists still don't think so, and they've been wrong all this time, and they will still continue to be wrong. So I don't know. I think the fee structure should cover for it. I think and if the price, you know, based on the price, eventually the kahunas of price.
To quote Garth from Wayne's World, it's like the only reason that you're doing it is because you're getting paid. And that's just wrong, man. Ben Ark, having the price and the halving go down, the reward go down, is part of the long-term purchasing decision for Bitcoin. But what good is it if it kills the Bitcoin?
I think this is a very important topic. I think I've mentioned it a few times that we should challenge those Bitcoin dogmas and, you know, just hypothetically in our minds, like maybe this 21 million hard cap for now, it's great as a bootstrap period. Everyone gets immense wealth and they pour that wealth back into Bitcoin, and we have this great growth and development of the Bitcoin ecosystem. But eventually, game theoretically, would that be in the best interest of everybody for that cap to continue to exist? For example, when you're securing the network and you're having to pay these miners, whether or not we'll, you know, still be using proof of work by then, I don't know. But I think it's a very important question, like, why are we stuck to this arbitrary number, 21 million? It gets a lot of Bitcoiners on edge because it's something which is sacrosanct and set in stone that there'll only ever be 21 million of these things. But as we saw with the John Newbery inflation bug, like, it is possible to create more Bitcoin than the 21 million cap. And it could be done probably in a way which isn't a hard fork. I think it's probably something the users of Bitcoin, when that problem really rises to the surface, or when that issue really rises to the surface, the users of Bitcoin will decide whether or not they want to get that 21 million cap, and whether or not they feel that actually a steady rate of inflation and continuing to pay mining would be in the best interest of the whole network. Some people would argue that by that time, like, nation states will mine Bitcoin at a loss as a way of securing property, because they don't want one nation to have 51% control over the Bitcoin protocol. So if the US is like mining for free and they're trying to take control of the Bitcoin protocol, then China will also mine for free, and they'll compete, and they'll be competing basically over the securing their property and on Bitcoin. I that all feels very hypothetical to me, and I think it's a very good question. Like, should we be beholden to this 21 million cap? And I mean, for now, I think it's, you know, it will continue to be what it is. But I think eventually, but personally, I feel that we could very well move away from it to incentivize miners to continue mining. But it's a good topic and interesting. And I'm glad that people are talking about it more now.
Well, and certainly the reason, Ben, that the Bitcoiners freeze up when you talk about it is because it could hurt their investment thesis. If you have the HODL investment thesis and you get your, you know, 0.1 Bitcoin or 1 point Bitcoin or whatever, you're going to hold it because there's only 21 million and you're locked in and it's really simple. If you start messing with that, it messes with the investment thesis. Also, people feel like they got a bad deal. They got in, other people made money, they wanted to as well. And then on top of that, looking over at Ethereum for a minute, they've actually made changes to make holding their coin more valuable, more profitable. They've introduced that burning system. They get rid of the fees, they get rid of the excess coins. It's actually a deflationary structure. And if they pull off the switch to proof of stake, there'll be yet another reason to hold your coins, reducing the number of coins in circulation and perhaps increasing the price of the base currency, which is, seems to be what the Bitcoiners want as well. Josh Shigala, what about this idea? Satoshi said 21 million. Other people say maybe more.
Yeah, it's actually, I think Ben has kicked off the next scaling debate. Because actually, it's been a concern of mine if I run just the vague, feel it out gut math in my head, I start to think, well, look, if all the transactions are running on second layer, which they should, what's incentivizing the, you know, and I really don't, and there's nothing forcing me of closing channels for years, and I just keep passing Satoshis around before I settle for, like, let's say 3 years. I guess eventually I will have to settle, but maybe that transaction will be too expensive. Maybe it will be not expensive enough because you know, there's not enough people settling. And this is constantly, this is like my brain. I constantly like think, oh yeah, but no, but yeah, but no. And in a way, having and I'm not saying this is the right way to go, I'm just saying it's an option, like Ben, in a way, having a continuous, very slight inflation, this is horrible to say, could be an answer to the scaling debate, where that keeps the miners happy because they're ready to take new fresh Bitcoin. Let's say it's just one Bitcoin every block, or less, you know, it's half a Bitcoin a block. But it's a controlled inflation rate. The concern for me has always been not that there's an absolute set number and it's a deflationary system. Of course, the 21 million was what got me really into Bitcoin. It was what highlighted the Bitcoin all those years ago back in 2010. It was like, holy shit, there's a thing that can be limited to 21 million only and it's digital. That's amazing. And the 21 million was this arbitrary number, but because of the scaling debate, and I can tell you, if you have infinite block size, some asshole will fill that block up. If you have a 10 gig block size, some asshole will pump shit into that block until it's full. And as soon as it's full, and it'll be cheap all the way up until it fills up. It'll be cheap, 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 and boom, then mega expensive. And so really what happens is that really the ultimate scaling is layer two, is Lightning. And on Ethereum, it is going with multiple side chains as well as a lot of the other stuff that they're doing there. But we have to incentivize the miners and continually incentivize them. I don't know. I think this is a conversation that might need to happen once there's mass adoption of Lightning and we start seeing more and more transactions happening on Lightning and less transactions happening on the Bitcoin network. Again, we've seen the hashing rate, which is absolutely extraordinary. It's way above security. Like, it doesn't need to be this secure. So I think there's a way to go down and still keep it secure. It's a conversation. I'm willing to have. It's a scary conversation because there's a lot of very, very hardcore 21 million nerds, I guess they'll be called, instead of big blockers. But interesting conversation. I like it.
And just like that, Josh Igala became a Keynesian. Right on the air, you watched it happen. He said, inflation is necessary. Additional funds will be necessary. Just thinking about it off the top of my head, one of the ideas, maybe if we look at Bitcoin that haven't moved in 9 or 10 years, Bitcoin that maybe have been sent to a null address, maybe even we could set up a null address and you could donate your Bitcoin to that address and then it could be given to the miners. And many of those solutions, I do think we need to pay the miners, but I'm not quite so doomsday on everybody about the network just stopping. I think there'll still be a lot of incentive to run the network, either as Ben said, as a government or a company like Amazon, who sees it in their best interest to continue the network, or even individuals or computer researchers who keep it running to see what will happen next. However, it always is good to be paid and to pay people for their work. And previously, that's how it's worked on Bitcoin. Moving on to issue 4. Issue 4, the CME group is back again, and they've got futures for Bitcoin and Ethereum, this time tied to the euro. It seemed like only yesterday they introduced CME futures, and I'm pretty sure the Bitcoin market crashed horribly after that. The futures people taking it out on the Bitcoin hodlers and wrecking the market. Josh Igala, will it happen again? Are these futures once again just a clever way of saying, we've created a system where you can bet against new technology and we're all going to make money and new technology is going to lose?
Yeah, first of all, what the hell is that weird picture of that dude with the shiny hoodie and a mask on? It just seems weird. I don't know. Why is that guy?
It also looks like he has a bag that looks like food delivery.
I know.
So Bitcoin, Ethereum,
who chose that image?
Food delivery. And the article I noticed now is written by Emmanuel John Milton, which is always good when we're using other people's names. But oh well, so much for Bloomberg.
Yeah. But okay. So these interesting ways of creating paper contracts to bet against Bitcoin, for me, is totally arbitrary. And the thing is that all it does is give strange parts of the speculatory environment access to Bitcoin in a weird way. It's just like, you can bet odds or tails, right? Positive, negative. You can bet on 0 or 1. But if you go to the casino, there's a nice picture. You can bet on either this picture or that picture. It's the same bet. It's either going to go up or down. But it's, now you're betting on a nice two pictures. These tools are just different ways of betting on the Bitcoin price or the Ethereum price. The thing is that it gives access to certain types of money easier. And that's what's interesting. I personally think all of this stuff is more of a manipulation. The ability for people that have access to newly minted Federal Reserve notes to be able to access, so newly minted Federal Reserve credits, I should say. To have access to Bitcoin exposure on the down, and that's really that is a price manipulation, and it could be definitely used as price manipulation. Let's see what happens. Honey Badger doesn't give a shit. That's all I know.
Well, everyone always tells me that I need to grow up and allow people to short things and allow people to bet against stocks, even when I think we should be being more positive and betting on stocks and betting on things that you like. However, once again, the thing that worries me here is the thing that worried good old overstock.com back in the day, and that's naked short selling. I worry about these fancy institutions saying, well, you want to bet $1 million against Bitcoin. You don't actually need $1 million to make that bet. And then if you can get a bunch of those not backed bets, and they put them on the market and they affect the market as if they were backed, that's where we have a problem. And the more and more of these weird Frankenstein's financial innovations they hook up to our good old Bitcoin, the more I know that one of them is going to say, hey, how about you let me short it now and pay for it later? And that could just completely manipulate the market, as we've seen with gold and silver, even admitting recently in trials that they did in fact manipulate the silver price, just like everyone said. But I don't think they're going to punish the company. It was just a few bad apples, you know. Yeah. Dan, Eve, what do you think about the CME futures? They're back to take our money again.
Yeah, wasn't it JP Morgan as well? Was it that got caught? Or at least there was a lawsuit about.
It was a few bad apples at JP Morgan. Of course, the whole company would never be in favor of a policy that ruined the silver market.
Oh, of course. No, of course they wouldn't be in favor of making money for the company via manipulation in an underhand way. They're too respectable to do that, of course. But with Bitcoin and stuff, it seems like it's okay. It's a free, everyone's still calling it the Wild West, right? So it's free. Everyone's got free rein to kind of to manipulate right now in the open. Obviously, the thing is with the futures markets, at least there's a little bit more regulation kind of behind it. But isn't it a weird thing that they're just released? Or releasing a euro futures market when pretty much, like, isn't it like 1-to-1 at the moment? Is it like 1-to-1 for euro to dollar? So it's just I don't know, like a shitcoin mirror. So you can buy it with this shitcoin or this shitcoin, but they're both the same amount. And there's also, I think the other thing is that we haven't sort of picked up on here right now is the fact that there's that pesky little ether again included on riding on the cartels of Bitcoin. So, you know, it's obviously CME's, you know, have Ether futures as well tied to the euro. But it's a crazy world out there. It's a crazy world out there. I think naked shorts are obviously very dangerous. And I agree with Josh as well about the fact that it's, you know, newly printed credit that just kind of, funnily enough, gets printed out of nowhere. So whilst everyone's saying Bitcoin just comes out of nowhere, you know, they print money out of thin air, but so does quantitative easing. And that seems to be okay. And everyone still agrees with that. And then they're now using quantitative easing to infiltrate these futures markets and dampen the bright futures of hodlers. So I think it's bad, bad, bad. I think we should stop the sell button, or at least the only way you could sell Bitcoin is at a higher price than when you bought it. And that's the only way the price literally only goes up. We should, that's it. I think we should put a virus out there so that you can only sell Bitcoin at a higher price.
And by the way, I just want to quickly interject and, you know, make sure to state the fact that I don't think I would vote or upgrade my Bitcoin node to an inflationary Bitcoin that goes above 21 million. But I like the conversation, and I think the conversation should be had.
Oh, we've gotten to signaling already. There's a lot of signaling.
I also wanted to interject as well that Josh's advocation of inflation isn't for Keynesian to increase aggregate demand in their nation, it's to increase and keep the security of Bitcoin, which is a very separate thing to Keynesian economics.
Yeah, so, and it's not arbitrary. Like, the thing I don't like about fiat is you don't know in this many years how much it's going to be. What I like is a set rule to be, in a set rule, I know exactly in 100 years how many Bitcoin there is. I guess that if we change that as a community, which will never happen anyway, but even if we vote on it, because there'll be people that say no, enough. And but if we say there's one, at least there's a set amount, and this is kind of important, right? There's a set amount. We know it's one Bitcoin every block that's released, or half a Bitcoin, or 1/10, to keep the miners happy while everything goes on layer two. But yeah,
and that's why we have dead high consensus, isn't it? Because we're not going to end up with that kind of model where someone can just turn on the money printer. Like, yes, maybe after a lot of like investigation and research and science, we may decide at some point that keeping a steady inflation in Bitcoin to incentivize mining is a good idea. But it's something which we would arrive at collectively through dead hard consensus. And like Josh says, it may just never happen because
And it would absolutely end up in a fork where one half goes one way and one half the other.
The 21ers.
Yeah, the 21ers. It would definitely be small block, big block type of nightmarish 16-year-long debate.
Well, I like Dan's idea to fix the sell button. I think when you push sell, it should say, are you sure you want to sell? And you should push it again, and it should show you like a chart of Bitcoin going up and like, you are here. Are you sure you want to sell? And then maybe the sell button can, like,
stops moving.
Yeah, it moves around the screen and you're like trying to click on it. And then it says like, push refresh to sell. And then it says like, don't push refresh, we'll log you out. Like, there could just be a whole system. This is what Coinbase should have been working on, instead of all those things where you could learn about shitty altcoins and get some, or how they kept working hard to add the next shitty altcoin to their platform. They could have just had this perfect system where, just like, you know how you could never unsubscribe from some of those things like the Record Club and that kind of stuff, they keep going through menu after menu, like deleting your Facebook account. They're like, are you sure you want to delete Face Club? Your friends will miss you. And they show you big pictures of them, all of the pretty friends, girls.
AI crying.
Really sad. Oh, yeah, they put faces on.
The Bitcoin pizza guy looking really sad. Like, so
one time, Laszlo Hanek sold his Bitcoin, and he only got two pizzas for $10,000. Do you want that to be you? Like, this is the kind of technology that Coinbase should have been working on instead of all the nonsense they were doing. But yeah, we still don't have it. We still don't have that exchange that will stop you from making a horrible mistake.
Yeah, with this awful face of crying, but then underneath, this is not financial advice. Please do what you want.
I do think, though, dare I say it, I know that 21 million, it's a very nice number, and I don't want to offend anyone, but I think human psychology, it should have been like still finite, but like 21 billion, just so that, you know, I mean, obviously we wouldn't have the more than one memes, like, oh, you know, there's only 21 million people, so not everyone in the world can have one. We wouldn't have those memes, but we would have a number that, you know, because, you know, when I try and shield Bitcoin, people still are like, I can't even have one. Like, so now they're seeing it as a negative, right? Not rather, some people see it as a negative. Like, I want a whole unit. And I know it's something to aspire to, but it's just like, you know, gratis points, all the cigarette sort of points that you used to get, and air miles and stuff. They don't give you like, you get 0.0001 air mile for this journey. You know, you get like 7 trillion gratis points with this one pack of cigarettes. Like, and that's a psychology thing.
It used to annoy me about pinball machines. The numbers were too big. It was like, bing, bing, wow, 7,652,432,000. Yeah, I don't know. That was a weird number I just called out. But, you know, it was just too big. I just wish I'd played the pinball. It was like, seven.
Seven.
Yes. I got the seven this time, you know.
Well, that's sats. I mean, a while ago on Reddit, every day there was someone posting, I'm in the one in a million club, because they had 21 coins. And then it's like, I got a Bitcoin. And then people will be like, I got 21 million sats. So I think the bar just lowers. So I think it's okay. I think sats can have the best of both worlds. People can still have something they can target for. But we need the exchanges to start listing sats as well. Like,
I think sats is a better idea than trying to change it or trying to have move the number down. I do like Dan's idea, 21 billion. That's better. Usually people say like 42 million. Like, we just need twice as much, or 100 million. But to put it up into the billion level really does kind of psychologically, like, I see what he's saying. We could have had a lot more. But then if you think about it, the early Bitcoiners would have been buying hundreds or maybe thousands of Bitcoin.
Dan's BIP 21 billion. I look forward to it.
But it's all relative though, right? It's, you know, I just think that if you hadn't have had the 21 million in your head, the mindset would have been different anyway. Like, it's only because we're basing it on our relative point in space-time about knowing already that there's this history of 21 million. Whereas 21 billion, you know, it would mean that people, you know, Doris from number 42 can have 7 Bitcoin instead of 0.3.
I always imagine, because Satoshi was a genius, right? And I imagine just Satoshi sat there with his, you know, cigarette on a big stick. And then he's just like, yeah, yeah, they'll only ever be 21 million. Just it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. Bootstrap. And it's the bootstrap thing. Like, he knew that this was the bootstrap period, 50 years of immense growth, because everyone gets rich and pours all that capital back into Bitcoin. And then in the back of his head, he's like, oh, yeah, probably we'll divulge from the 21 million. But for now, yeah, yeah, 21 million. They'll only ever be 21 million. Just carry on, carry on, carry on. Buy Bitcoin.
It is now a magic number, though. Right. I can't deny it. 21 million is the most magical number. It used to be 3. According to, is it Most Def? 3 is the emerging number. Now it's 21 million. They should remake that song.
That was Nielsen. That was Nielsen, John Lennon's friend.
I feel like we've gone on a tangent, but.
Ben, well, let's see. Well, I do think Dan should write that up as a BIP. Then we could call you a Bitcoin Core contributor. But we do need to go back to Ben Ark and say, Ben, what do you think about the CME's plan to unleash Bitcoin and Ether futures on the market?
It's another double-edged sword. So futures are useful and important for people on their balance sheet when they don't want to have this, you know, if they've got this speculative thing which they're working with, and they want to protect themselves. So you get local Bitcoin traders used to all the time. They would like hedge the Bitcoin price. So if Bitcoin dropped too much or went up too much or whatever, or dropped too much even, sorry, then they won't be wiped out completely in the time in which they had the coins. And then that's true for, you know, bigger operations as well. That's why they need hedging. They want to hedge against the price of Bitcoin. So they're not exposed to that extreme volatility for short periods of time. But then when you have like crazy price volatility, then those, that gets wiped out. People get wiped out, and then actually that contributes to the volatility. So for the short term, yes, it's a good way for you to, like, you know, hedge against the volatility. But then when you actually have like a proper down cycle event, then it actually perpetuates the down cycle and makes it even worse for everybody. But I mean, so Galloy this week, they've released their stable sats thing, which was based off the standard sats idea, where they do hedging. So they have sats and then they do hedging on the Bitcoin in order to keep a peg to the USD. And then they have like a stable coin solution. So in your wallet, in your Galloy wallet, you'll have, you know, whatever, Bitcoin Beach wallet, the people of El Salvador will have Bitcoin sats, but then they'll also have USD, and USD will be stable to, you know, 1 or 2%, and that stability will be kept through hedging. So it's a powerful tool, like a useful, powerful tool for those sorts of mechanisms. On that note, I would also like to say that the standard sats, this is a very important week, because standard sats have emerged my very goofy PR, which I put in. I managed to sneak in Cymru coin, which is the Welsh pound. So Cymcoin, so CYM. and that's now in their fork of Simple Bitcoin Wallet. So standard sats, the way it works is you have an Eclair node, and then you have this plugin which you can put into your Eclair node, and then it does hedging with Collider, so you can keep a peg to USD or to GBP or to Euro or whatever. And then by using a hosted channel, so this Simple Bitcoin Wallet uses a hosted channel off that Eclair node, you can then have a stable medium of exchange for someone to use. So in Wales, we could have a wallet with sats in, but then someone could also choose to have their funds in a hosted channel, which is to Cymru coin. And they can interact and they can buy and sell using Cymru coin. It keeps a stable peg, and it's actually just the euro, but it's called Cymru coin. Anyway, managed to get my PR in there, so I was pretty happy about that. It now exists. The Welsh have, we now have our own currency pegged to the euro. And on the euro USD parity, this is something else I wanted to cover. I can't help feeling like my conspiratorial mind, like the ECB is just waiting to be able to turn around after a year or two of USD euro parity and say, hey guys, why don't we just use the USD? You know, why have we got this euro thing? Let's just look at dollar. So that's my conspiracy theory on the ECB, on the European Central Bank. But no, hedging futures are important for that stuff, but it also then makes volatility worse ultimately because people get wiped out.
We're running out of time, but we're moving to the prediction or story of the week. Dan Eve, are you ready with a prediction or a story of the week? Go ahead.
I know that I'm dragging this out, but one more thing to add. Like, Bitcoin is a new form of technology. Why don't we innovate a new financial instrument? We've got spot, we've got futures. Why not a past ETF? Why not a past ETF? Think about that. Think about that for next week.
Pipe and smoke it.
So I can speculate on the price of what Bitcoin used to be.
Yeah.
Nice.
And you'll always be right.
Exactly. Innovation. That's what that is. So my prediction is that after the sailor, the debacle, I can't call it that, after sailor stepping down to focus even more on Bitcoin, because he doesn't focus on Bitcoin enough, I think that Elon is going to step down to work on Doge.
Excellent prediction. Ben Ark, a prediction or a story of the week? Go ahead.
I'm trying to get my screen share ready. Whether I can do a screen share. I'm going to try and do a screen share. Wait there. You'll have to bear with me though, because I'm trying to find the video. So two stories of the week. The first one is that managed to get Cumcoin in Simple Bitcoin Wallet, which is great. And then I'm just trying to make sure I'm not going to dox anyone here.
The Welsh, with their Cumcoin.
The whole world will be using it. That's the joke. Wait there. Let me clear my screen a bit so I don't end up doxing myself. Right. Oh, man. Oh, Linux. Entire screen. Oh, here we go. Cool. Ah, am I sharing a screen?
You are.
Yay.
The entire screen.
We can see Telegram.
Okay. Yeah, you can see Telegram. All right, cool. So here we have Vlad, who's one of our LMBits developers, on our on-chain wallet in LMBit, so you can manage your on-chain funds. We now have a very cheap $5 hardware wallet, which we've been working on, where you can log in to the hardware wallet, and then you can do stuff. So the idea is that, the idea is that a cafe can accept Bitcoin payments on our point of sale extension. And then we have a loop out extension to on-chain. So on-chain's not dead yet, where the cafe owner can accept Bitcoin payments in Lightning. And then it loops out to on-chain, and then they can manage their on-chain funds in this extension. So here we are. So this is he's got his XPub in there, so he can generate addresses and so on. But then also using this very cheap hardware wallet we can give to somebody, they can then spend funds as well. So here, I think in this little video, we should be able to see. Okay, so you have you can pick which coins you actually want to spend, which is quite nice. And then you can check and send. And then it says passing PSBT. And then it says, okay, that's the amount you want to send. Next, and then confirm. Signing PSBT, then you're signing it on an external device. So the hardware wallet has your private key when you can sign, and then you can manage it through your LMBits on-chain, through the on-chain wallet extension. So it's pretty powerful as a kind of like onboarding tool. Let me see if I can go back here now. How do I not share screen anymore?
You're not sharing.
This is modern sorcery. That's incredible, Ben.
Yeah, I'm not sharing.
That's amazing.
And it's all done. It's all done through web serial. So you're not having. So you can go onto the on-chain extension, plug in your £5 hardware wallet, and then sign transactions on the hardware wallet. Send them back to the extension. The extension will broadcast them. And it's all just done through the browser over web serial. So you're plugging this $5 hardware wallet on. It's not a crazy secure hardware wallet like a Trezor or something like that. But it's very good for if you're onboarding a cafe, particularly in somewhere like Europe, where most people who are accepting Bitcoin payments, they just want it as a way of accumulating some Bitcoin. So they retrieve the transactions in Lightning, and then they're looped out to on-chain. And then they can manage them through this very cheap hardware wallet. So that was my story of the week. Is Vlad's contribution there with that hardware wallet? It's fucking ace.
Very cool.
Yeah. Is it open source hardware wallet? How's it?
All open. This is the best thing about it. It's a very standard microcontroller. It uses an ESP32. There's a million varieties of this microcontroller. This is just one we've picked with a nice little screen on it, but you could use any old ESP32 microcontroller on it. But what you get, because it's an off-the-shelf device, is you lose the supply chain attack. which is very powerful. So actually, if you had like, if you want super security, you could have like a Trezor with a secure chip, and then you could have an off-the-shelf device microcontroller like an ESP32. And then the factory, which is making those ESP32s, they don't know that that's going to be used for a hardware wallet. And then that way you get kind of the best of both worlds. So hopefully we'll pull in some multi-sig stuff as well into it eventually. But for now, it's just a nice tool for, you know, your cafe, your bar owner to just manage, you know, a couple of tens of thousands of dollars worth of funds in a way which is like easy to use.
All right. And check it out at LN Bits. You just Google that, LN Bits. Josh Agala, do you have a prediction or a story of the week? Better get ready.
The story of the week is we're going to start to do a proof of attendance on our Twitter spaces. So if you join our Twitter spaces, you get an amazing NFT. And yeah, I thought it was a really cool idea to have these. We've made these beautiful rings. And you get this this ring image, and it's a power, the standard ring of power.
Ring of destiny.
And a ring of destiny. And of course, we'll use it to help market the standard a little bit. So you'll put your, you know, you'll tweet about us and say, hey, ring of attendance, I was attending the Twitter spaces, and put your address in. And then, yeah, we'll drop you one of those. So. Join us. Go to the standard. Go to the join. Nice. Join the.
I've said for a long time that NFTs are perfect for marketing. You can give them out for almost for free. You can track your subscribers. You can send them additional gifts. You can use them as tickets or ticket stubs. They can be collectibles. I think it's just a fantastic way for companies to get their word out there. Even this week, the Circa Casino in Las Vegas. Sold an NFT and then had a fancy party for people that own the NFT. And that's long predicted on this show and other shows when we talked about NFTs or blockchain collectibles, but it's good to see it happening. And like Josh is saying here, you can give something away for free and then later on that thing can have value. They had a giveaway recently over at Curio Cards. They gave away like an apple that you could attach to your moon cat. Another early NFT. And now if you look at the moon cats with apples, they're selling at a higher price than the normal moon cat. So something given away for free now becomes something valuable. So it's interesting.
It's super fascinating. As an economist, it's the most fascinating side of the whole space is watching these little mini experiments pop into existence. And I'm going to do this for a proper goal. Yeah, MMA fighting.
It's also interesting to see they had another sale this week of the Honus Wagner baseball card, the most valuable baseball card in existence. It sold for around $7 million. And they said there were only 50 of these cards in existence, according to the information that they have. And I thought instantly of my blockchain collectibles, my Curio cards, and how we can tell exactly how many were printed by the contract, how many were lost in this contract, how many haven't been active on the network in 5 years, so on and so forth. And just the incredible amount of information that you get with blockchain collectibles, and that this information is really the valuable part. Like we all learned about metadata in all the trials. So we'll have to see how that goes if NFTs come back with the rest of the crypto market. But we're running out of time. Still a chance for you to give us a thumbs up on the like button. We didn't say it a bunch of times today, so maybe we get less likes than if we remind you about it all the time, but there's still a chance for you to do it for free by yourself, just to push that like button. Recommend us to some forums, paste it into Reddit, say on Twitter, give us a comment. All of those things would be great. Otherwise, it's about the end of this show, and thanks so much for watching. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.